It's a foggy night on old Cape Cod. A perfect night for a mystery. Tonight, Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater presents a Captain Underhill mystery entitled The Case of the Shooting Star. Shooting stars. Normally, we associate them with a night. But of course, they're coming in all the time. We only see them at night. Most are the size of pebbles or grains of sand that streak across our atmosphere as they burn up. But once, about every 2 days or so, on average, one is massive enough to make it all the way down. Most land in the ocean. The bigger ones, called bolides, can create quite a show. At night, they appear as flaming fireballs. In the day, they leave a trail of smoke. Super cold, when they enter the Earth's atmosphere, they quickly heat up, creating so much stress they can explode like a shrapnel bomb. In 1868, one exploded over Poltusk, Poland, spewing out 10,000 fragments. Another time, in 1912, in the skies over Holbrook, Arizona, there was a sudden, huge cacophony of bangs and flashes, and fragments, like bullets, rained down for miles around. On a separate occasion, about 15,000 years earlier, another meteor landed in Arizona and blew out a crater 500 feet deep and a mile across. Two of them, landing inside the same state, might make one think that Arizona is not such a safe place to live. But if you play the odds and believe in the law of averages, it's probably even safer. Of course, all of us do play the odds every day of our lives, whether we know it or not. After all, it was a meteor the size of the Rock of Gibraltar that most likely made the dinosaurs disappear. And who knows? Another one, the same size, arriving tomorrow, might make us disappear too. As for Gerald Marshall, living on Cape Cod, he might have wished he had paid more attention to the odds. He might have wished he had moved to Arizona. But Gerald Marshall is done playing the odds. He's done wishing, and he's not moving anywhere. Gerald Marshall is dead.
My name is Alexander Schofield, M.D. In preparing this account and thinking of the role my friend Captain Waverly Underhill played in it, I was musing about how people's names sometimes get associated with celestial objects. Usually it's for discovering them, but not always. For example, think of Neil Armstrong and you think of the moon, Mark Twain and Halley's Comet. Actually, Halley and Halley's Comet, I suppose. Well, now Underhill has something to hang his name on, something originating from outer space. Not a moon or a comet in this case, but a meteor. Captain Underhill's meteor. It's on its way to a museum, too. I insisted upon that. Although it's not the kind of museum I had in mind, something dignified like a natural history museum. Instead, it's going to one of those seedy tourist trap museums in Niagara Falls that caters to tabloid tastes, featuring objects of the curious, the grotesque, and the bizarre. This establishment is located next to Ripley's Believe It or Not, just up the street from Louis Tussaud's Wax Museum. And it's not just the meteorite that's going, but the whole end of the house, rebuilt. The floorboards, the roof, the walls, the ceiling, the bureau, the bed, the bed sheets, bloodstained. I think the way the whole thing is being handled is distasteful. But Underhill doesn't seem to mind. He likes the idea. I told him if that's the way he feels about it, he belongs in a waxworks, along with his meteorite. Still, there's no denying the brilliance with which he pursued the case. Jack London once said, I would rather be a superb meteor, every atom of me in magnificent glow, than a sleepy permanent planet. Underhill was both. combining both the brilliant flashes of a meteoric mind and the steady, dogged persistence of a permanent planet. So, naturally, it has to be Captain Underhill's meteor. After all, he was the one who discovered it, even though all of us attending the lawn party that night all saw it at exactly the same time. We all saw it, but it was only Captain Underhill who saw something different. Why aren't you up enjoying the party?
I'm enjoying the stars. I get tired of all that talking. I'd rather listen to the marsh. Do you see that tall grass, the Phragmites? It's full of red wings. I watch them fly into roost. Where's that plane I'm hearing?
Come up and join the group.
Oh, I don't know, Alex. Sometimes being around youth is rejuvenating. Other times it just makes me feel old.
Well, you're not old, and you don't need to be down here brooding about it. Come up and have fun.
If I wanted fun, I'd go swimming.
Oh, no.
Well, they are the only ones who seem to be enjoying themselves.
Don't be ridiculous, and don't you even think about it. Not in this chill night air. You're not that young.
Thanks. You know, having one's personal physician at parties is worse than a chaperone. Why don't you go home so I can cut loose?
Don't use me as an excuse. Besides, you didn't bring your bathing suit.
Go away.
If you stay down here much longer, people will think you're sulking.
Solitude is not sulking. If it makes you feel happier, I'll keep a smile plastered on my face. Go away, Alex.
No, fine. But if I encounter any other curmudgeons, I'm sending them down.
As long as they're female. Not more than half your age. Never mind. Stars are lovely. Is everyone all right?
Yes, we're all going to look. Aren't you coming?
I don't think so.
Did you see it? Spectacular.
Yes.
A meteor.
Yes.
That's the biggest one I've ever seen. Don't you want to go look for it? This is exciting.
I think it broke up.
Well, there may be fragments.
I doubt you'll find it. Maybe there is a fire.
Well, come, let's go see.
No, you go chasing after sirens if you want to. I'm going home.
Well, you're acting pretty blasé about this.
No, I just don't want to be out too long in this chill night air. I'll read about it, or you come tell me.
Well, everybody's going. Hurry.
Come see me tomorrow. Tell me what you find.
Well, I'll bring you back a piece.
Probably you won't, but good luck looking. Well, it's a waste of time. They're not going to find anything. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. That's what a marsh is, after all. It's a haystack. Maybe the Martians have landed, and they're all fools for rushing over there. Serves Schofield right if he becomes a specimen. Or is burnt to a crisp by a death ray. Too much boundless enthusiasm. Always has had. It's bad for him. Oh, well, what's that saying? Fools rush in. Oh, but Underhill goes to bed. I'll read about it. Wait, what's that down there? Looks like something on the bottom. I can't tell. Well, only one way to find out. I don't think anyone will mind. Hope nobody comes back too soon, but... Well, if they do, they do. There's a shirt, trousers. All right. Here we go. Oh, my, that's naked. It's cold. I'll get, I'll get used to it. Next time I'm going in all at once. All right, I can see it. See. One. Two. Ah! Looks like. I think it is. Just my luck. They rush off, and I find a piece. Oh, damn. Someone's coming back already. Where'd they put those down? I have to get dressed. Before I get arrested.
Waverly?
In the kitchen.
Oh, all right. That sounds like a cold to me. That night air got to you, didn't it?
Sick business a little slow these days. Making door-to-door house calls.
You asked me to drop by, remember?
You didn't find anything, I know. I read the paper. No fire either.
Ah, but do you know the latest?
Someone was struck and killed by a fragment.
How did you know that?
I used to be a policeman, remember?
Oh, since when have you stopped? Well, now this information I happen to have is that...
The body was found lying in his bed, at home. That the meteorite, the size of a pea or smaller, penetrated the roof, the ceiling, the body, passing through a major organ, or was it the head? Continuing through the mattress, the floorboards, or... How deep was it?
You found all that out?
No, I assumed it. Am I right?
Yes, it was embedded in the floorboards. How did you know?
A man or a woman?
A man. But how did you know the body was in bed?
I guess. It was nighttime, after 11. Where are most people at that hour? Besides, when we're lying down, we're exposing much more of our surface area to objects dropping in from outer space.
Well, yes, but still, how did you know it was the size of a pea?
Come on, let's walk down to the library.
What for?
I want to look up about meteors.
Oh, bless you. You ought to be in bed.
No, Alex, it's mild.
I warned you about that night air.
It wasn't that. It was the swimming.
What? Swimming? When?
Last night, after you all left.
But you didn't have a suit.
I said after you all left.
But why in the world?
For this.
What? What is it?
What you were all looking for. I noticed it's on the bottom of the pool. Without the underwater lights, I never would have noticed it.
Are you sure?
Reasonably.
In the pool? My God. It's a miracle no one else was struck.
Maybe. Maybe not. Let's go. Achoo!
I found two more books that may help us. Are you learning anything?
It says here that each square mile of Earth...
Be quiet.
Oh, be quiet yourself. My ears are plugged. I have to speak up. This isn't a funeral parlor, you know. It says each square mile of Earth receives one hit about once every 1,000 years. There's no preference for geographical locations, although most meteorites have been found in temperate zones.
Why?
More people to find them, I suppose. It says the chances of someone being struck in the next 100 years are 3 out of 10, but the chances are increasing.
Well, why is that?
Same reason. More people. Like shooting fish in a barrel.
Oh, now, that's not a very good way to think of it. Here's something here in this book. It says the speed of a meteor is hundreds of times the speed of a bullet. And here's a quote. The white heat produced by their velocity can be so explosive, despite their small caliber, that to be hit by one may feel more like a thunderbolt than a bullet.
Not always true. It depends on which direction they're moving as they enter the Earth's atmosphere. If they come at us dead on, like a moth flying into a car's headlight, they move faster, burn hotter and bluer. But if they come in from the side or behind us, matching our own orbital velocity, they can fall in quite slowly. Here's an account of one that landed on a frozen lake near Hasle, Sweden. It just dropped in and bounced off the lake without breaking the ice or even melting it. Read me what it says in that book on accidents.
Ooh, what do I look for?
Oh, I don't know. Try meteors. False alarm. Look here. It says finding a meteorite is quite rare. There are an estimated 1,400 samples in museums around the world.
Waverly, keep it down. Well,
what do you want me to do? Hold it in? You're a physician. You know how dangerous that is.
Oh, it is not dangerous.
My head could explode.
Don't be ridiculous. There now. You see, they are rare. That's why you've got to turn your piece in. It belongs in a museum.
Well, mine's only little. South Africa has one weighing 60 tons. In Mexico, a two-tonner was found wrapped in mummy cloth in a Montezuma grave. The famous black stone of Kaaba at Mecca is almost certainly an enormous meteorite. What did you find?
Well, mostly just statistics on accidents caused by natural disasters.
Read me some.
Well, they are grouped by year.
Well, pick a year and let's hear it.
All right. 1988. Deaths by lightning, 82. Deaths by cataclysmic storms and floods.
That would be hurricanes and tornadoes.
And high winds, too. Total, 59. Cataclysmic earth surface movements.
Earthquakes, volcanoes.
Right. Total, 7.
What else?
Well, here's a category. Struck accidentally by falling objects, 835 fatalities.
That's quite a few.
Falling stones, falling rocks, falling boulders, falling trees, snow slides, objects falling from buildings, objects falling from stationary machinery. Nope. No meteors, though.
I'm not surprised. My book is older, but it says there is no recorded instance of anyone ever being killed by a meteor. Of course, I'm sure there have been some unrecorded instances. People were living here a long time before records. Maybe the one in the Montezuma grave killed the guy it landed on.
Well, some people have been wounded, I think.
That's right. Here's the most famous case. Mrs. Ann Hodges of Sylacauga, Alabama, was taking a nap in December of 1954 when a brilliant fireball trailing smoke exploded overhead. Mrs. Hodges, being asleep, didn't hear it, but she was awakened soon after by her mother, who thought the house was falling down. They found a hole in the ceiling, a 9-pound black stone on the floor, and a big bruise on Mrs. Hodges' hand and hip. According to this, it also says that since 1847, only 11 meteorites have been known to strike buildings. The last was in 1971, when one crashed through the roof of the home of Mr. and Mrs. Casarino, outside Hartford. When that one hit, they were asleep, too. Next morning, Mr. Casarino discovered plaster dust on his living room floor. Looking up, he saw the meteorite embedded in the insulation of the ceiling. The sample was sent to the Smithsonian.
Ah, exactly. And that's where yours belongs, too. At least at the Cape Cod Museum of Natural History.
You want me to turn it in to the lost and found? Do you think anyone's going to claim it?
Of course not. But it's not a keepsake. It has scientific value.
I doubt it.
Well, now, how do you know? You're not a scientist. You just told me these objects are rare, plus the fact this is the first recorded instance of anyone being killed by one. Waverly, you should get home and get into bed.
Why? You ought to want me out and about infecting everybody. Drum up more business for you.
I don't think of it that way. That's the same as you going out and committing crimes to have more things to investigate.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Or a fireman starting fires. Or an arms maker starting wars.
What do you mean?
I mean, when you're investigating certain types of crimes, that's exactly what you look for. Someone who's knowledgeable and who stands to gain. Such as a doctor causing illness. A cop creating crime. A fireman starting fires. Or an insurance man causing an accident.
Wait, what are you saying?
I'm saying this may not be the first time anyone's ever been killed by a meteor, but I'm fairly certain it's the first time anyone's ever been murdered by one.
What? What are you saying? Wait a minute. Waverly, what do you mean?
Where do you think you're going?
Come on, Frank. I want to get out.
What's your hurry?
It's late. Come on. It's practically lunchtime. Oh, Frank! Come on. I'm mad. Frank, wait a minute. Someone's here.
Who is it?
I don't know. I don't recognize the car. Is somebody alone?
A reporter, probably. Find out. Whoever it is, get rid of him. Tell him it's old news already.
Who is it?
Mrs. Marshall, my name is Waverly Underhill.
New reporters!
I'm not a reporter. I'm here from your insurance company.
Oh, just a minute. I'm not dressed. Frank, the insurance man is here.
I heard.
What's he doing here? We haven't even filed the claim.
I don't know. I don't know. You recognize him?
No.
And he's probably an investigator sent out by the company.
Frank, I'm not ready for
yes,
this.
Yes, you are. It's just a little off the plan, I know. But you still know what to do.
He should have called first. He should have made an appointment.
If he didn't call, it's because he didn't want to. He's an investigator.
Oh, God.
Come on, get dressed. If you don't see him now, he'll get suspicious.
Oh, God.
Calm down. Now, you listen to me. If he's an insurance investigator, he's going to be trying to trap you.
Oh, Lord.
Don't let him catch you in a lie. He may have been watching the house.
No.
So don't say I'm here. But don't say I'm not here either. You get me?
Oh, God.
Get a grip on yourself. Now, look. He's going to try and trap you, even if he doesn't suspect anything. That's just the way these guys do their job. I know. All you have to do
Frank,
is just try to...
If you knew somebody was going to be watching the house, then what are you doing here?
All right. That was a little careless. I admit it. I got cocky. There's nothing we can do about it now. You ready?
Where will you be?
Not here. Come on. Talk to him in the kitchen. I'll be in the study. In here in the closet.
Frank, I'm scared.
Just stick to the plan. Act like you don't know anything. Don't ask too many questions. Let him do the talking. Okay, keep going.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I kept you waiting.
It's a lovely day.
You can come in now if you like.
Thank you.
I don't usually sleep this late.
It's a lovely day.
You can come in now if you like.
Thank you.
I don't usually sleep this late. I haven't been sleeping well.
Understandable. My condolences.
Thank you. Well, my husband Jerry used to handle all our insurance matters. If this is about our homeowners, I'm sure the house...
The homeowners? Oh, my goodness, no. You mean you don't know?
Know what?
About the life insurance.
What life insurance?
You know, I was wondering if this might be the case. So this was something your husband handled privately. Well, that's not so unusual. Of course, if the person taking out the policy doesn't know, that's a different matter. In fact, that's illegal. But for the beneficiary not to know, well, that does occasionally happen.
What are you talking about?
Would you mind bringing me the policy? I'll explain.
I don't know about any policy.
Exactly. Which means it will be someplace your husband knew you would be sure to find it. Shall I help you look?
No, I'd rather myself.
Fine. While you're looking, I'll just take a glance here in the back bedroom. That's where it happened, isn't it?
Yes, but...
Is there a problem?
No, I mean, you can look.
Well, I'll have to sooner or later.
It's not cleaned up.
That makes no difference to me. My own wife's passed away. I've gone back to being a bachelor. You hunt for the policy. I'll be in here.
Frank, he's in here.
I heard. So what? He's not going to find anything.
But he wants me to find the policy.
He'll find it.
What do you mean?
Open the file drawer. Start looking.
But I...
In a few minutes, you'll take it to him. He can't tear it up, so that's no danger. I think I know what he's up to. He knows the insurance company is stuck. They're going to have to pay. You could expect him to offer a deal, some kind of quick cash settlement. He'll give you reasons. Probably he'll say it'll end up in court and drag on or something. Oh, he's nice now, but watch out. Pretty soon he'll start to bully you.
Oh,
now,
no.
When he does, you can help yourself. Get rid of him. Yeah, now listen. Here's one more thing. If he offers you a deal the first time, it's not a deal. It's a test. He's not offering. He's fishing. Fishing to see if you're guilty. These guys know that only guilty people make deals. Only guilty people want to stay at the court. So don't go for it. Don't even act interested. You gotta watch out for these tricks. These guys have a whole bag.
Oh, God, Frank.
Oh, hey, you're doing fine. You're doing it. Just relax. All you have to do is act honest. And remember, he's not. So watch it. Okay, get going.
Mr. Underwood! Mr. Underwood! Would this be it?
Let's see. Why, yes, that's it. I knew you'd find it.
It was right under insurance.
Not surprising. By the way, it's under Hill. Underhill, the underwriter. That's what I was before I retired. Now I only work when they need me. Better than Underhill, the undertaker, I suppose.
Yes, I suppose so.
You know, I used to know an undertaker. Grim fellow. Used to say all our lives follow the same progression. From undertakings to undertaken to undertaker. Still, I suppose the mortuary business and the insurance business are not too dissimilar. We both have to deal delicately with the unpleasantness of sudden death.
Yes.
Has that bed been moved?
What? Yes, when they were searching for the fragment.
Do you mind if I roll back the mattress?
No.
You know, I was thinking this whole room almost belongs in a museum. It's so amazing. Your husband was sleeping at the time?
Yes.
Were you sleeping too?
No, I was in the kitchen. I heard the blast. I felt it shake the house. I ran outside.
You didn't know then that your husband had been struck?
No.
Didn't it surprise you that he didn't wake up to all that commotion?
Not really. My husband was a heavy sleeper.
Must have been.
Also a heavy drinker.
Oh. And you didn't realize what had happened until the next morning.
You didn't suspect anything when you went to bed?
I was sleeping in a different room. Is this something you need to know?
Oh, no. No, of course not. I apologize. I'll keep my morbid curiosity to myself. Although with an accident this bizarre, I'm sure you can...
I'm going back to the kitchen. I don't like being in here.
I'm coming, too. Now, Mrs. Marshall, so I don't take up too much of your time, let me try to explain what you've got here. This is a twin policy, a combination life insurance and AD&D.
What's that?
Accidental death and dismemberment.
Oh.
A normal death pays face value of the policy. An accidental death is double indemnity. It's twice the value.
You mean...
Now, just wait. Wait. Just let me look this over and get it straight. I don't want to give you wrong information. Yes. You know, back in the old days of patent medicines, when the fear of being struck by a meteor was actually something people worried about, there were policies that listed death by a meteor specifically. They were gimmicks, mostly, so the salesman could wave the policy under the client's nose and say, this could be worth $1 million. Same sort of come-on they use in Atlantic City. Naturally, since it's just another form of gambling. And I'm still looking here, still looking. Back in those days, there were also phony devices sold that were supposed to protect you. Special clothing, hats, umbrellas. There was a thing called Dr. Whipple's Meteor Bumper. A thin metal sheeting, guaranteed to shatter 99 out of 100 small meteors.
You don't say.
Really. Designed for spaceships. But it could work on clothing, I suppose. Or bedsheets. You know, after this, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see this kind of insurance make a comeback. Sometimes it takes a freak accident like this to create the fear to generate the demand before you can sell the insurance. Maybe travelers should come up with an umbrella that bounces meteors. let's see. Ah, here we are. Triple indemnity. Accidental death by... public conveyance, trains, buses, planes. Death by falling debris. Yes, planes, satellites, and... Yes, here. Here, it even mentions it. Meteors. This policy was written for $500,000. Triple indemnity makes it worth $1,500,000.
What?
Congratulations, Mrs. Marshall. You're a wealthy woman.
Oh, my. My.
Are you all right?
Yes, I think so. This is quite a shock.
No doubt. I'm sure you wouldn't like to think of it in these terms, but... You have really hit the jackpot. Tell me, was your husband afraid of being struck by a meteor?
What? No, I don't think so.
It's just a little odd that he would carry two policies like this. He must have had some concerns about dying in an accident.
Oh, you know what it was, Mr. Underwood? Underhill, I'm sorry.
You're getting it. Think of Underhill and Over the Hill. Same thing. What was that?
Hurricanes. He was terribly afraid of hurricanes. Living on Cape Cod, every hurricane season, he would get very nervous.
Ah, well, that makes perfect sense. Certainly that's the reason why many people purchase policies, for peace of mind. I guess knowing you would be well taken care of must have really eased his worries.
I guess so.
If he only knew how well he succeeded. Think how pleased he would be.
Mr. Underhill, I'm feeling very tired.
Yes, of course.
I'd like to deal with this later.
Well, certainly. You have an entire year in which to file this claim, so there's no hurry. You just take your time.
Thank you.
You just file whenever you're ready, and we'll cheerfully pay in full.
Thank you.
I meant that suggestion, too. About the museum, I mean. You can certainly afford to build on a new addition. You know, It's just impossible to get over what a fantastic coincidence this was.
I know.
When you consider the chances of something like this happening, the odds are simply astronomical. Oh, dear. That's a pun, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, first of all, what are the odds of someone, anyone, being hit? Scientists say 3 chances in 10 over the next 100 years. Then you have to multiply by the odds of that one person turning out to be your husband. That would be 1 out of the entire population of the planet. Say, Oh, say 1 in 5 billion.
I'm not too interested in numbers.
Ah, but you should be. Because, again, you have to consider the odds of that one person just happening to carry this type of insurance. Or any insurance at all, for that matter. After all, most people don't have any. Again, multiply by several billion. And if that's not enough, then you have to factor in the odds that if an object smaller than a pea passes through the human body, how many places can it hit and not be fatal? This one just happened to strike through the heart. Taken all together, why, the whole thing becomes so wildly improbable, you can actually say, it never happened.
What do you mean?
What I said. You can actually say, it never happened.
But of course it did happen.
You mean your husband was killed? Yes, killed by something. But what was it? Not a meteor.
Wait a minute. What's going on here? You're saying you're not going to pay?
Afraid not.
You have to.
No.
We'll sue.
Who's we?
I mean, I'll sue.
I doubt it.
You little shyster. What are you trying to pull?
More like, what are you trying to pull, Mrs. Marshall? Do you want to hear my theory? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't want to talk about this.
Then don't talk. Just listen. The night this all happened, I was not far from here. I was just over there on the other side of the marsh. You can see the house if you look outside. I was attending an outdoor lawn and pool party. I was standing off by myself, just listening to the night sounds, when I became aware of the sound of an approaching airplane. I could hear it, but I couldn't see any wing lights or navigation lights. In fact, no lights at all. And then I was distracted.
Waverly. Waverly, there you are. Why aren't you up in
Georgia? At the same time, you were outside, too, over here, watching the skies and watching your watch. Your husband was already sleeping. Or is that a misnomer? He was drunk. Or drugged. Or both. Whatever, he was already in position, let's say. Back at the party, I was still being distracted, although perhaps I was just slightly aware that the sound of the high overhead airplane engine had cut out. Some time passed. Then, of course, came the biggest distraction. Pandemonium for a while, and then everybody went piling off to search for where it landed. I was leaving myself when I walked by the pool and noticed a piece of black rock lying on the bottom. I went swimming for it. And then, from very far off, I noticed the sound of that airplane. I asked myself, what was a plane doing practicing stalls in the nighttime without lights? Maybe the plane was there on purpose. Maybe its purpose was to launch the pretend meteor. Something military, was it? A sidewinder rocket? Or something just left over from the 4th of July? Whatever it was, it made a dandy imitation as it streaked across the sky. Its nose cone was full of meteorites. Real ones. From outer space. But that's not where you got them. You stole them from a museum. That was your irrefutable evidence. But really, it was just a new wrinkle on the old trick of peppering a gold mine. Of course, you didn't put all the meteorites in the nose. You kept back one piece, smaller than a pea. That was the one that was going to kill your husband. Metaphorically. And where were you through all of this? As I say, you were in the backyard handling that other problem. How to murder your husband and make it look like a meteor had done it. A rifle wouldn't do. You needed something that would tear through the human body quickly, leaving behind the kind of searing wound, like a red-hot meteor. What else, of course, but a laser? A desktop industrial-strength welding laser of the pulsating variety, capable of delivering one massive jolt. Did you have it mounted on the roof? Had you already burned a hole through the shingles and the ceiling so you could line up the body? I wonder. Did your husband, Jerry, look up and notice that hole as he was lying there? In his condition, probably not. But even if he did, he wouldn't have realized it was the equivalent of staring down the muzzle of a gun. Lying down, he didn't know it. But in effect, he was standing up before a firing squad. You waited. And then, at the appointed moment, you threw the switch. Then it was done. Nothing to do but check his pulse. Drop the meteor pebble at the bottom of the burned hole, remove the laser machine from the roof, and then what? Go to bed? Or did you stay up to celebrate?
You're crazy. What? That's crazy.
Crazy? No. Outlandish, maybe. But not as outlandish as what supposedly happened. I guess when you set out to perpetrate a hoax, sometimes bigger is better. Oh, don't look so worried, Mrs. Marshall. I'm not with the police. I'm only an insurance investigator. So long as you never file a claim, I'm not really interested in what you and your accomplice, your boyfriend, I assume, are going to do. Of course, if I really wanted to investigate this, I might check with the airports to see which planes were in the air that night and check on their pilots. I might look to see who had recently purchased or rented a laser machine. I might find out which museum is missing some of its meteorites. But I don't want to go to all of that trouble. I just want you to bury that policy. And tell me, how right was I?
You're not going to tell?
Thank you. You answered my question. I'll be going.
Wait a minute. Wait. Aren't you going to offer me a deal?
A deal, my dear? I'm too old for deals. Deals are for younger swimmers in the game.
How did you know?
I thought I'd explained. Although I must say, I've never seen anyone say they were tired after just being informed they are $1.5 million richer.
But if we don't file, you won't tell?
No, I'm going to explain something else to you. I'm not really an insurance investigator.
You're not?
No. I'm not a police officer either, although I used to be one. I'm just an ordinary citizen who read about this in the papers, put $2 billion and $2 billion together and figured out what you were up to. And if I can figure it out, so can others. And now I'll give you a little advice. Don't try to run. If you do, you'll be caught. When you are, you'll be sentenced to death. You can ask the judge. Maybe he'll let you substitute a laser beam for the electric chair. Or you can take this policy and go down to the police and turn yourself in. The courts look favorably on that. You can paint yourself in a minor role. Say you were duped, coerced. Your husband beat you. Blame it on your boyfriend. It was his idea. He was the mastermind.
Well, that sort of...
What?
Nothing.
Well, anyway, it's your best option. That way you won't die. You'll only go to prison for the rest of your life. At least there is this consolation. Those extra thick prison walls will provide plenty of protection against incoming meteors.
Nobody goes to prison. Don't move. Stay right there.
Your boyfriend? You forgot to introduce me.
That's right. You think you're pretty smart because you figured it out. Well, you're pretty dumb, too.
No argument there.
You would have been safer not reading the papers.
Frank, what are you going to do?
Our guest is so fond of firing squads, I think we'll arrange one. Down basement. Let's go.
Frank.
Shut up. Follow me. Bring along that pair of handcuffs. Move slowly. Don't try anything. Stand over there.
You mean over here?
Don't move.
I got it, Thomas. Here they are.
They're for him. No, you idiot. Don't hand them to him. Slide them across the floor. But give me the key first. All right, mister, pick them up. I'm sure you know how they work.
Yes, I do.
That's good. Now pass the other end over the pipe before you fasten the other one. Quit stalling. Do it.
That's good. Their arms may get a little tired, but don't worry. They won't be tired for long.
Frank, let's just run and leave him here.
No way.
Even if you kill me, they'll find out.
Maybe. But maybe they won't. I'm willing to bet you haven't told anyone. You're just that cocky. Interested in lasers, hmm? You're in luck. So happens we have it right here, all wrapped up. But I'll unwrap it for you. You know, the nice thing about a laser is it's so neat. Bullets are so messy, so much bleeding. The laser has the added advantage of cauterizing the wounds it creates. So little blood. How you feeling there, Mr. Detective?
Frank,
shut up and plug this in. This will just take a minute to build up the charge. You got a minute, don't you? I told you to shut up. Go upstairs if you're squeamish. You don't have to be down here. Get out.
But...
Go on. Go on. Go all the way. Get out. This is almost ready. Then you can have your demonstration. What? No deals now, Mr. Underhill?
No. No deals.
I should think you might be wanting to make a deal right about now.
You have no scruples, my friend. Any deal with you would be worthless, so why try?
You know what? You're right. You know what else? This first one's not going to kill you.
Sadistic on top of unscrupulous. It's a bad combination. You should be in therapy. You know I have a close friend. Bravo, my dear. Excellent. You did it. I knew you could.
I did it.
I thought you never would. Quickly now, pick up the gun.
What?
Marcia, the gun. Pick it up. Very good. Now get the handcuff key out of his pocket.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Just reach in.
Oh, my God, it's waking up.
The key, Marcia, get the key.
No, I can't. He's waking up.
You'd better hit him again. Wait, no. I meant with the board. All right. Now, the key. You can do it. Don't worry.
Oh, no.
He's not going to move anymore.
Oh.
Wait. What are you doing, Marcia? Don't do that.
I deserve to die.
No, you don't.
I killed him. I killed my husband, too.
You killed your husband, but they're not going to mind that you killed Frank.
Oh.
It'll count in your favor. Believe me. And they're going to know you saved my life, because I'll tell them. Marcia, don't waste your life. Not now. Especially now that things are looking up.
Schofield,
we're down here. It's my friend. He's a doctor. He'll help you.
Oh, God.
I heard a shot. Waverly, what happened? Oh, my God.
Never mind. He's dead. Marcia, this is Dr. Schofield. Alex, would you mind letting her hand you that gun? Good. Now, Alex, there's a key in that dead man's pocket. I don't think Marcia is up to fishing it out. But first, would you mind unplugging that thing?
What is it?
I was scheduled for some non-elective laser surgery, but I think I'll get a second opinion. Unless, of course, you think otherwise. You're the doctor. Good to see you, my friend.
I went to your house. I had a hunch you might have come here. I saw your car, but I was hesitating about coming in, not knowing what you were up to. Then I heard the shot, so I rushed in.
Of course, as usual. But this time, perfect timing.
And so ended one of Captain Underhill's most spectacular cases. It was a long time before the local newspapers could stop writing about it. The supermarket tabloids all featured it on their front pages, and for once they didn't have to lie too much. It was difficult to tell if Captain Underhill's brush with death had dealt him a setback. His tendency toward solitude and moodiness was at least no worse than before. I remember one particular impression I was struck with when I first came running down those stairs. Somehow, even with his hands handcuffed above his head and a laser pointed at his heart, he still looked like he was in charge of the situation. But as for me, it definitely had its effect. Now I shiver when I think of the cruelty and callousness some people are capable of. I can't see a firework or hear a plane overhead without thinking about it. And now, whenever I see a shooting star, instead of making a wish, I say a prayer.
You have been listening to Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater's presentation of The Case of the Shooting Star. The actors in tonight's play, Dave Ellsworth played Captain Waverly Underhill. Wally O'Hara was Dr. Scobie. Kevin Groppi was Frank. And Anne-Marie Lang played Marcia Marshall. Tonight's program was produced, written, and directed by Stephen Thomas Oney. Audio engineering by John Todd. Original music by Mark Birmingham. Special thanks to the Center for Short-Lived Phenomenon, and credit due to Guy Murchie's fine book, Music of the Spheres. This program was recorded at HT Recording Studio, Cape Cod, and Rosemead, Los Angeles. Copyrighted by Stephen Thomas Oney for Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater. This is Lou Dumont wishing you a pleasant evening and inviting you to tune in again when the fog rolls in on another chapter of Cape Cod Radio Mystery Theater.